Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. This week, Mina chats with Adam Lefkoe of Bleacher Report about the future for Jalen Hurts with the Eagles in the wild Monday night football game between the Ravens and Browns. Download and subscribe to the Mina Kimes Show as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. This, by the way, is our final episode of 2020 of The Right Time. I'll say nice things or something like that on the back end of it. But for now, it is the time of week where we have a guest join us. And now, from brother from another, check it out. On Peacock, that's OTT, it's over the top, it's internet sort of situation. He co-hosts the show with Michael Holly. My man Michael Smith, what's going on, man?
What's going on, man? Doug, I'm honored to be your last guest of 2020, closing this joint all right.
Yeah, man, and while I'm talking about Brother From Another, shout out to the homie Vinny Goodwill, who is a frequent contributor to From Another. So you guys who enjoy hearing Vinny on here, and you enjoy hearing Michael Smith on here, you can hear Vinny with Michael Smith on Brother From Another. So Bam. Be sure to check that out.
There you go. Yeah, you know, he holds it down for us. He's like our unofficial third brother from another, you know?
Yeah, man. So I want to start here, and we're going to get some football because you're a football nerd in that way, right?
Yes,
so,
sir.
You know, you're getting that. And actually, this is where I do kind of want to start because I know you, and we have talked about this a bit, about how, you know, you used to work here. And then in the time away from here, one of the things you kind of had to do was just kind of detach from sports. Because when you do this job, you're always thinking about angles and everything, which I always knew had to be tricky for you, especially with football, because you love it. Like you are a guy who really, really digs it. How much are you enjoying now getting back into it like that?
It's starting to come back for me, man, you know, because I love the process more than anything. I'll be honest with you. You hit it right. I'm a football nerd. So building a team, scouting, drafting, signing is why I was so obsessed with fantasy football, why I was so obsessed with franchise mode back in the day. That's what I really get into. That's what I enjoy the most. The games themselves, to be honest, come kind of secondary for me.
You're that dork.
Very much so. Very much so. Very much so. But you're right, though. You know, when I was doing it every day, the hardest part about stopping was my routine got interrupted. Because you said earlier about the angles, you know, and like, what's the storylines? So I got so accustomed and conditioned to crafting storylines for purposes of conversation that, you know, when I was on, let's just call it sabbatical, it was hard for me to watch it and for my brain not to work that way. So to be honest with you, Bo, I kind of got robbed of my love for it from about, you know, 2018 up through 2019. So it wasn't until recently that I really started getting back into it.
Yeah, and I think, like, one of the things I talked to Dan about a lot, because Dan got kind of bored with, like, the element of sports, and he's always just kind of like, yo, we could be talking about something else. And I'm like, nah, I actually still enjoy these sports things, man.
Yeah.
Like this is still fun for me, you know? Like, just coming in and randomly talking about what happened with Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield or whatever. That's still entertaining for me.
But see, that was different, though. So it's like, and you know, part of it, too, man, is I'm just getting old. And so I turn in a little earlier than I used to. So, you know, and then on Sundays, man, it's like, my son loves to watch the game, but that's some time I'll spend with my daughters or what have you. So I'm not parked in front of Red Zone like I used to be. But man, Monday night was as much fun as I've had watching sports in a long time, just to watch it as a fan. I think the last time I probably got into a game like that, you'll love this, probably maybe Patriots-Falcons Super Bowl, or even Patriots-Eagles Super Bowl, or Kobe's last game. Those are some times that I can remember where it was like I just fanboyed out and didn't think about, well, how are we going to attack it tomorrow? Or didn't think about the bigger picture or some of the larger implications. I'm just watching that game Monday night like, damn, this is really happening out here.
Yo, that game was wild for me because, like, the ending of it was in my move from couch to bed phase, right? And, once I get to bed, maybe I'll see it, maybe I won't, right?
Yeah.
And so I saw when Lamar came back in for the fourth down.
Yeah.
And I saw that touchdown.
Yeah.
And I
woke you up.
Yeah, and I saw a bit of the drive back. Whatever happened in the drive with the Ravens when it won.
Mm-hmm.
The in-between, Baker Mayfield might have thrown a 50-yard pass with his left hand. That I was not able to do that part, right?
Yeah,
like, I needed to rest up for when Lamar got back out there. And Lamar is such a wild situation, at least in terms of the ways that we evaluate things. Like, that ending really let me know, like, what context is. right? And how much it matters in terms of the way that we present these stories. And that's not to say, and I'm not saying anything that's about to follow to indicate that people did not give Lamar a lot of credit for how it went in the end of that game. But if Lamar had been playing this year like he played last year, we would talk about that as a legendary performance, right? Not just like, oh, wow, that was bananas. It would be like, yo, this is like if Patrick Mahomes did something like that and ran back in from the tunnel, fourth down, because the quarterback you had in there blew out his knee. Yeah. And then on the run, looking like he was going to run for the first down, stopped, threw a touchdown pass. Yeah. And then they had to come back and do it again. Yeah. We'd be like, yo, this cements the legend of Patrick Mahomes. This is what it's all about.
Yeah, I feel like we'll look back on it. You're right. In the moment, we would be doing that with Patrick Mahomes. But I do think this is one of those moments where it will kind of go into his archive. And as Lamar Jackson takes that next step and starts, you know, the Ravens start winning a championship with him and maybe he gets another MVP or two, I think this will be one of those legendary games we will look back on. You're right. In the moment for Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers or somebody like that, it would be right now. But, man, the fourth down part is the trip part for me because so I'm watching it, pick the Ravens going in. You know how this talk show thing goes. A lot of times we start to think about the next day. I'm like, all right, if I get this right, I'm going to talk mad against Michael Holley. He had the Browns, I had the Ravens. So it's like, what, 34-20? I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, I'm feeling good. So I took a melatonin. I was not only in the bed, I took a melatonin. I'm like, all right, they ain't coming back from this. Browns take the lead. I'm like, they got no shot with McSorley. So McSorley hurts his knee, and then Lamar runs back in. So I watched the whole thing. I don't know if he's cramping, if he had to take a I'm like, okay, he's going to run this, right? Or are they prepared for the run? For him to throw a touchdown pass on fourth and five was one of the wildest plays I can remember. So that was crazy. Obviously, the Browns come back. Bing, 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 take the lead. And then he passes him down the field, you know, wins it with his arm. I think it is legendary. It should be legendary in its own time. I agree with you, man, because I prefer to hold on to the fact that he had to go for two. I don't care what he said. I have no reason to believe that he was a liar. But for me, that was so relatable, man, because ain't a whole lot of things you can relate to Lamar Jackson on. We could all relate. So, like, when nature calls, you just got to go. And that shuffle, I remember doing – I flashback, man. I was on a trip to Paris with my then-girlfriend. Eventually, she was obviously going to be my wife. I'm in Paris, and I went to – what was it? Planet Hollywood. And I don't know what I ordered, but I remember walking down the street in Paris for, like, a good several blocks like that. So, when I saw that, I'm like, yeah, man, that's real.
Yeah, the shuffle, but the big one was, me and Gabe talked about this, when he got to the door, I was like, yo, get out the way.
That was the giveaway.
That is not about leg cramps, homie. No. I don't care how much time left in the game. Like, you just never going to be able to convince me.
He went by himself, which means he, like, if it was cramps, he'd have been walking slowly with a trainer. My man outran everybody because time was of the essence. Because if he did not use all of that 4.3 speed, he was going to have to get a new uniform. It's fine. I mean, maybe it was a combination of cramps and runs or whatever. Ain't nothing to be ashamed of, man. I was proud of him in that moment for overcoming that, you know?
Yeah, like, that's the one thing about it is, like, people gonna laugh at you if you boo-boo on yourself, but we recognize that as an adult, if you have boo-booed on yourself, there must have been some significant, like, extenuating circumstance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was happy. I enjoyed it. Why let the facts get in the way of a good story? But yeah, that was a legendary performance right there.
Are you enjoying this NFL season? Because I am finding that with everything that's in the air, I am still enjoying the NFL. I can't do it with college. College is taking me to a dark, introspective place. The NFL, for whatever reason, isn't doing that to me.
For one, they're playing most of their games.
Yes.
A little shuffling here and there. But, you know, college, I can't even keep up with the schedule. And again, going back to that inner GM nerd that I talked about earlier. And this is crazy because both of us from the South, but you more into actual college football than I am, even though I grew up in New Orleans. But New Orleans didn't, you know, we didn't really get down with LSU like that when I was growing up.
Yeah.
You know, for me, biggest college football game of the year was Bayou Classic, you know. Right. So I didn't really grow up watching, you know, Big 12 or at the time Big 8 or, you know, Big 10 or SEC football, like talking about it. So when I watch it more from a scouting perspective, or at least what I like to think of as a scouting perspective.
Right? Yo, there was your notebook. You know, they sat it down.
Like, you know, I got to put a first round grade on him, you know, that type of thing. So I wouldn't be watching it like talking about it anyway, but I'm with you on college. It's just such a mess. Whereas the NFL has at least more consistency with it. Even if they got to reschedule a few games, all the games have been played so far. At first, it was weird for me to watch it with no fans. Same as when the bubble first started with the NBA, I didn't really like it, but I got used to it. So as the season has gone on, I've gotten more invested in the outcomes of the NFL games. And also, too, I've just kind of gotten over the who's on the COVID list, who's not. That at first was a turnoff, but I'm like, all right, it is what it is. This is the reality that we're living in. Yeah, it's gotten better as it's gone on. For sure.
I got a theory as to why it is that you didn't jump on like LSU like that and I jumped on Texas in a slightly different way. You are from Louisiana, like originally, mm-hmm. and I am not originally from Texas, right? Mm-hmm. Like I grew up in Texas, but we moved there when I was 7. Whatever like the tenor is, because like my buddy Joel Anderson, for example, mm-hmm. Joel Anderson grew up rooting for the University of Houston, not for the University of Texas. And black mm-hmm. people from Texas are really not that inclined to get in on either of the state schools because of the spectacular legacies of racism Correct. That they both have. Like they were Correct. Born into looking at it that way.
Yeah,
I was not. So like we moved there when I'm 7 and you're like, okay, 7, that's that. Yeah, but still, but like my parents are not from there. They don't have the level of animosity. Yeah. Toward the local school.
It wasn't passed down.
Yeah, exactly. So like my dad's from Louisiana and my brother went to Southern, all of that. Yeah. Hear them talk, let them talk about LSU. Like my dad softened about it over the years, but like black folks from the South of a certain age mm-hmm. almost absolutely do not root for University of or blank state because yeah. it means something different to them.
Spot on.
Dude, I went to high school, we wound up playing for Texas, and then that kind of ramps it up. And I grew up in Aggie country, so you want to antagonize, you know, the people you don't like wind up being people that you want to antagonize. But yeah. that's something that, like, people don't quite understand and realize, like, especially with LSU, because they were sorry forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were not between, like, 1963 or something like that, and basically the year 2000.
Yeah.
With a couple of hiccups.
Yeah.
LSU was sorry.
I mean, I don't remember paying attention to them prior to saving. Yeah. You know, and obviously the state adopts them. But you're right, man. Black people, we ain't get down with LSU like that. They ain't recruiting New Orleans like talking about it for yeah. a long time. So, you know, I had a few friends went there. My brother actually went there for a couple of years before he moved out to L.A. But when I was going to Baton Rouge, man, I was headed straight Southern. To Southern.
Southern, I feel like this is something white folks don't get. But also, I just feel like black people who don't have an attachment to that part of the country mm-hmm. don't understand. I talked about this for a long time, man. Southern's something different. There ain't no school I can think of where people love their school in the way that people that went to Southern. Look, my daddy got put out of Southern.
Right.
And still loves Southern.
Exactly.
In a whole different... I once went to Southern University's homecoming and Woo. Had the time of my life for the whole weekend on $15. Now, part of that was because my Uncle Wilbur worked on the yard and he got us into a bunch of stuff. Yeah. But Southern is the ultimate, like, low-impact, great time. You don't need no money, but you still got that Louisiana questionable work ethic and dedication to kicking it.
I got a few regrets in my life. One of them is that I didn't go hard enough in college. I think I went to one Southern homecoming.
Oh.
I think I went to one.
And you was in New Orleans.
I was in New Orleans, man. But I was like, I was focused and I was working. I was trying to, like, you know, do my internship thing and all that kind of. I just had my priorities all messed up. I was worried about school and working, trying to set up my career, man, and not realizing you only got one shot at this. So if I could go back, I would slap the out of young Michael Smith and be like, say, bro, go to Southern homecoming. Man, did you ever go? How many like HBCU homecomings did you go to?
See, I didn't wind up doing that many just because also you got to remember when I was in school, like I'm in school with, we had Clark there. You had Spelman and Morehouse over there. You had Morris Brown yeah. down there. That was 3 homecomings.
Don't they have, what's the name?
Atlanta University Center.
Yeah.
So that's 3 homecomings. Like, yeah. it's kind of hard to get out there and go to somebody else's homecoming.
Why would you leave? Yeah, it's already there.
The other part was, in my crew, I had the car. And so it really came down to whether or not I felt like driving. I made a Mardi Gras run one year, though. That was fun.
Okay.
That was fun. We made that ride.
One and done? That was all you needed with just one?
Yeah. It was. Just, I mean, look, man, that's 7 hours in the car, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like yeah. that was an undertaking.
I never did Freaknik or Kappa Beach Party. I heard stories yeah. about it. Never did either one of them. Yeah, I think I was too young.
Yeah, like Freaknik, the thing was, the last Freaknik was my freshman year.
Yeah.
The last Freaknik of consequence was 98. You weren't gonna catch no more of those. But Southern, man, like the culture around Southern football is really not terribly dissimilar to the culture around any, for lack of a better term, big time school that you're thinking about. Like, the mm-hmm. locals are invested in mm-hmm. that way. And especially back when the talent was stronger,
mm-hmm.
when they had dudes out there.
Yeah.
Man, listen.
Bayou Classic was the event of the year, socially and from a sports standpoint. So it was, for me, like growing up, my football was Bayou Classic, But mostly just the Saints, man. Mostly just the Saints.
That's unfortunate, man. That's not how you should learn about football. Like, I shouldn't have learned about football via the Falcons and the Oilers, but at least
we both smartened up.
Yeah.
Both of us at a young age, this ain't it.
Yeah. You realized before I did, because you had Michael Haynes break your heart.
Michael Haynes. Clark High School's own Michael Haynes on a hitch route from, was it Chris Miller?
Who was the quarterback?
Bobby Hebert was ours. Then he go to Atlanta, you know, and then Michael Haynes would give him all that money to come to the Saints, and he ain't do nothing with it. I mean, bro.
Yo, let me tell this, folks. This actually got me thinking about something. You mentioned Bobby Hebert, as a consideration, right? And I don't think this is something that people of this era can quite relate to, and especially if you don't have like association with Louisiana. But Bobby Hebert is like a legit Cajun, right?
Like that
Adam Sandler sketch of Cajun Man. I'm not saying that Bobby Hebert sounds like that caricature, but Bobby Hebert is of that, like Ed Orgeron, mm-hmm. right? Like Bobby Hebert is one of those. So Bobby Hebert went to USL?
Sounds right. Yeah,
I think he went to what is now the University of Louisiana, but was University of Southwest Louisiana. And he was a star there, and then he went to the USFL, and he did all right. And then after that, and look, Bobby Hebert wasn't great. Like, he was a great college quarterback, but he wasn't no great pro. But Bobby Hebert talking like that, there was no way he wouldn't go play for the Saints. The Saints was like, no, this is us.
It was Bobby Hebert and, remember, John Forcade.
Oh, I forgot about John Forcade. I forgot y'all had another one.
And bro, I could see it like yesterday. I mean, to understand the evolution of the game, you're talking about introduction to football. And we're in this era of, you know, like pass happy, spread, all this sophistication, college offenses infiltrating the NFL. Bruh, it was like clockwork. Carl Smith, the offensive coordinator, and Jim Moore, the head coach, run on first down. Run on second down, shotgun on third down, crossing route to Eric Martin. They were in the shotgun on third down, and that was it. Like, the idea of shotgun on any other pass play was foreign circa 87, 88, 89. I mean, it was the most basic offense. Remember Eric Martin, the slow Eric Martin, he's nothing but drag routes. Dalton Hilliard. I mean, it was New Orleans finest on those teams back in the day.
Oh, John, I did not honestly realize until you said this that John Forcade was,
he one of them.
I can't imagine that, because that pride in Ed Orgeron. I don't know if you read that one story. And I actually felt where the Cajuns were coming from. I ain't like the way they put it, but there was one story where somebody was talking about Orgeron and everybody making fun of his accent. And I've never made fun of Orgeron's accent, but it'd be taking me aback. Like, oh, whoa, that's right. No matter what, I know it's coming, right? I can sit in there and be like, oh, man, there he is.
It's jarring.
They're like, if somebody made fun of the way black people talk, you wouldn't like that, but it's okay to make fun of how we talk. And I'm thinking, number one, y'all be making fun of how black people talk.
Yeah, I've been doing that for centuries.
Yeah, number one. But number two, I get your point, right? Like, if your entire cultural existence was a caricature to the majority of the country, I bet that would ultimately be whack. But Hebert was that dude. Ain't no way in the world in the NFL in 2020 that you out here getting your starting quarterback because the locals want it. The stakes have gone up way too high for all that.
Bruh, I didn't even grow up with the miserable Aints. By the time I started paying attention to football, they was legit. So you couldn't tell me Bobby Hebert wasn't back in the day. You couldn't tell me. I mean, throwing Hobie Brenner.
Oh, I forgot about Hobie Brenner.
No, I had Dome Patrol posters everywhere, man. Every time we talked about the bus rides before, right? Did we talk about that before?
I don't think so.
Oh, man, them bus rides that people used to take from New Orleans to Atlanta and
vice versa. Yeah. I've talked about, like, the recent bus rides are fascinating, right? Like, if
they
you
still
ever
do them?
Oh, yeah.
For Saints Falcons games?
I imagine they do them even more post-Katrina than they did before, right? Because you got a lot more folks from New Orleans who are in Atlanta. Nah, man, ain't nothing. I showed up to Lenox one day on December 26th, so the day after Christmas, and I forget what I had to go to Lenox for, but there was a Saints Falcons game that night.
Mm.
Dog, the bus had rolled up like on the Christmas holidays.
Oh, man.
That's all I'm telling you. No. They run that same bus company that be taking them to the casinos rolling them over to get in. Like, that was their joy.
Yeah.
But, about like they had the Cajun quarterback. Y'all was doing it.
That was easy to love them. Easy to love
them. I want to switch gears a little bit, because have you found this James Harden story to be as fascinating as I have?
I feel like I'm talking about it every day. And every day there's something new to talk about. So where are you on it at this point now that he actually showed up? It's miraculous, thank God, but for the grace of God, How he passed 6 straight COVID negative tests after partying in Vegas and Atlanta and who knows where else?
Like, amazing. Wow. Amazing. Amazing, right?
Holy crap.
You know, and then the question about just how good a shape he is or is not in. Because I did talk to somebody, like that one picture that went around the internet, he is in better shape than that. I did have somebody say that they had heard, like, watch out for what he looks like when he comes back. You know, so I don't know, because he was in such great shape, you know, in the bubble. So I don't know what exactly he's on. So there was that level. But the thing that gets me about James Harden, and I think that this is something that we could probably give a different level of illumination to for some people, is the responsibility that comes with being the star, right? Like with being the best player on the team or what it is, or being viewed in that way, where separate from your peers, you are a step up on the hierarchy and everybody knows it. Basically the boss. And like what the responsibilities are that come with being the boss. And it seems like, and I'm starting, I mean, and I know this isn't the newest thing in the world, but I feel like it jumps out a little more with younger folks, and it definitely jumps out with James Harden, that James Harden want all the good stuff from being the man and none of the hard stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like none of the stuff that you don't want to do. And what it took to really expose this is Russell Westbrook showing up. Dog, what are y'all doing?
Yeah. You know, you say you want a championship. And listen, they were up 3-2 on Golden State. I was talking about this yesterday. I hate to look at the last 8 years as some kind of abject failure. Like, there's a lot of teams that didn't win a championship over the last 8 years. Only one could say they went to the playoffs every year. He got scoring titles. Whether you like how he gets it, he's got 3 scoring titles. He got an MVP. They've been a contender. They've been relevant in a way that few other teams have. But he wants to win a championship, and he's got this wandering eye for Brooklyn, thinking that that's the better shot. When what's really disappointing is to, as all this stuff comes out in the wash, it's like, wait a second, man. You out here basically running the franchise, but running it into the ground. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, like the whole, how much better could they have been if James Harden weren't trying to stay in cities longer?
Yeah.
If meetings wasn't waiting for James Harden, like that entire environment. He's a star, both, you know, in terms of his talent, but also scientifically. Like, everything is revolving around him. And come to find out, it's dysfunctional because of him. Like, so you're trying to get away, but you created the environment that you're trying to escape from.
Yeah.
That's what's so disappointing.
He also, and this is where I think, like, our experiences can kind of inform this, right? Like, we work in a world that has a star system, right? Some people can do things that other people cannot do, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I work with Dan. Dan had a measure of accommodation for him that was not going to be made for me. That's what it is, right? Like, I'm not offended by it. But part of why I think I could be not offended by it, like, I work with Dan. Dan shows up when Dan's supposed to show up. Dan gets the job done, whatever the job is supposed to be done, you know, and we go from there. James Harden seemed to operate on the premise of, it don't matter if I do all this other stuff.
I'm getting 50.
And no. It does. Like, it does. Like, if everybody else got to be here on time.
Right.
If you're late every now and then, people will let it slide because it's you. Right.
Yeah.
But you can't be late all the time.
Right.
You know, you got to take on that responsibility. If you're going to be the person up front, you're going to be the person that makes all the money. You're going to be the person that gets all the credit. It really helps you get along with your coworkers if you just do some of the little things that they also have to do, right? Because if they feel like you grinding as hard as they are and you're as responsible as they are, then they don't care that you fly out when we got 2 days off to go party somewhere. They're not tripping on that.
I mean, the easy one is, like, we know LeBron had accommodations given to him in Cleveland. He butted heads with, you know, the folks in Miami because of the way things were done in Cleveland.
Because they don't do it that way.
They don't do it that way. But there was never any question at any point about his work ethic, about his commitment, about his professionalism. And for James Harden, man, it's like you can't have it both ways. You can't get everybody you want, have the entire organization adhere to all your requests, what have you, and then decide, nah, I got to go somewhere else. When you signed the long-term contract, if you wanted maximum flexibility, you could have signed a shorter deal with opt-outs the way LeBron has done all these years.
Yep.
So you want your money. You want to be the face of the franchise. You don't want to carry the weight. You want the glory, but not the story. You know what I mean? You want the fame, but not the work and the grind that goes with it. It's not that he doesn't work hard.
He's too good not to.
He was training in multiple ways. He was training for them road trips for the NBA season, but I don't doubt that he got his work in when he was in Vegas or Atlanta, but your teammates is in Houston, partner.
Right.
Like, you can't not show up to training camp as the face of the franchise, which is why at one point, man, I was thinking, man, the Rockets might just need to just go ahead and lower that price. And just, I wouldn't want a face of the franchise that doesn't have a full-on commitment, that doesn't set a tone. But, you know what I mean? Yeah. We're not just going to give him away. So I get that part, too.
But here's what I would be worried about if I was the Rockets is P.J. Tucker going to snap at some point and go haul off of Whoop J's Hard's ass, right? Like, that would be my concern, because this is my thought about him and being late or whatever. Now, keep something in mind, right? I've been told that, like, I don't know about with the Bulls, but with the Wizards.
Okay.
The team hotel on road trips, what you could guarantee was that hotel was next to a really nice golf course.
Right.
Right? You could be sure that it was going to be next to a dope golf course because Mike wanted to play golf. Like, that was going to happen. So, like, those sorts of accommodations and those sorts of things, right, happened. And I'm sure them other cats didn't mind staying an extra day in L.A. or staying an extra day in Miami, right? Yeah. Like, I'm sure them other cats was like, cool, we can kick it.
Yeah.
It ain't really that big a deal. But, like, when you Mike, you can do that. Now, also keep in mind, those dudes on the Wizards came to hate Mike by the time it was all said and done, right? But, you know, these accommodations, they happen. But P.J. Tucker felt like he should have gotten an extension that he did not receive. Like, and he's playing in the last year of his contract. And last year, they decided that the best way to get the most out of Harden and Russell Westbrook was to play little ball. Play all these guys who ain't that tall. And I remember I used to do it on High Noon, and Pablo would always talk about how it didn't really matter that these guys weren't that tall because they all had long arms. Now, the problem is, of course, number one, everybody in the NBA has long arms, right?
True that.
And so you, 6'5", P.J. Tucker with long arms, are still guarding Anthony Davis, 6'11", with long arms, or 6'11".
Yeah.
You can only do so much.
Wingspan.
Right. But there's, look, they ain't that many 7-footers in the world, right? If it was truly possible for guys 6'5", 6'6", to really guard 7-footers, then guys 6'5 and 6'6 would be really guarding 7-footers, and they wouldn't be nearly as many 7-footers in the NBA, right? Like, it wouldn't happen if that was a legitimately viable plan. So you imagine being P.J. Tucker, and you on this team, and you got this dude who don't be showing up all time and doing all this stuff. And if you P.J. Tucker, you've had to do all of these things, right? Like, every single bit of it to get to where you are. This dude don't show up all time. This dude doesn't want to do half the stuff that everybody else feels like they have to do. And now I got to go out here for 35 minutes a game.
And bang. Yeah, yeah. No, but see, we're talking about a couple of things, though, and I like the distinction that we're making here, because it's like, you know, whether it's golfing, gambling, nightlife. Look, man, you know, you're an NBA player. You'd almost be foolish if you didn't enjoy the spoils of being an NBA player. Everybody hangs out. Everybody, that's why certain cities got reputations. Everybody goes to the club. That's fine. Okay, that's fine. That's why they got certain destination road trips. Got it. There's a difference between your personal life and hanging out and getting it in versus being on time. Like, that's not negotiable. The rest of the stuff, that's your business. You want to burn the candle at both ends, do your thing. But when you're not on time, and this was actually hard for me, man, because I grew up in a household of late people.
Hold on. You grew up in a state of late people.
Touche. 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 Nobody is more, I'll be there, I'm around the corner when you're still getting dressed, than I am. Okay? Nobody is more, I'll call you back in a half hour and it's 5 hours later. Like, okay? My mama was late for work every day. Have no idea how she kept jobs. Okay.
Because everybody else was late too.
You know, my grandfather was a Baptist pastor for 55 years. I can't tell you how many times the choir had to pad to wait for him to come out the back to take the pulpit. All right. Mm-hmm. Like, just late. So I remember, man, you know, my first time ever being, I guess you could say, the focal point of a TV show was Numbers Never Lie. And I was commuting from Framingham, Massachusetts to Bristol, Connecticut, 5 days a week.
It's like an hour 45 minutes, right?
Each way. And the meeting was at 10 o'clock. And you know Kevin Wiles. Kevin Wiles is on with Nick Wright now. Kevin Wiles was a CP of the show at the time. So it was 10 o'clock. I was always habitually late. He's like, yo, man, what time you want the meeting to start for? And I'm like, it don't matter. 10 o'clock's fine. He's like, clearly it's not. he was like, you want it at 11? It could be 11. I'm like, all right. I mean, look, man, like, what you want from me? I'm commuting every day. What you want from me? I got a wife. I got kids at home. I'm coming from Massachusetts in the winter. He's like, Mike, nobody cares. He was like, and if you ain't on time, like whether you realize it or not, you setting a tone of professionalism. And if you ain't on time, what kind of message is sending everybody else who did what they had to do to be on time?
Yeah.
You not being on time, that's just rude and insulting to everybody else who made the sacrifice necessary to be where they had to be. And if you Russell Westbrook, just as many MVPs as James Harden, you got just as many championships as James Harden. He got three straight scoring titles. You got three straight triple-double seasons. Who the hell you think you are showing up late, making me wait to watch my film?
Dog, and that's exactly the one, right? Because here's the thing. Westbrook also, to be fair to Harden, Westbrook's stuff is colored by the fact that he's used to being in charge. Mm-hmm. And now he's not in charge anymore, mm-hmm. right? Like he went to somebody else's team, and now he's on the other side.
That's a hell of an adjustment. When you people are used to adjusting to playing with you, you got to adjust to play with him now.
Yes, but here's the difference between those two dudes, right? It was James Harden's team, so he didn't have to be on time. It was Russell Westbrook's team, so everybody had to be there on time.
Exactly.
Right? Like,
exactly.
Because Russ is going to be there on time, right? Like, that was, like they say, Russ, that's, you say whatever you want about that dude. That dude may not be the most disciplined shooter, but he is clearly disciplined about everything else. Every other thing. And so now he gets down there to Houston and he starts looking around and he's like, what kind of monkey business is this? Then the step before that is Chris Paul, who again, he ain't just used to being in charge of his team. He's in charge of all the players.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Telling people what to do. And then Chris Paul gets down there and is like, yo, what is this that you people are doing down here?
Yeah.
Where James? How come James ain't here?
Right.
Like, I could totally relate that day when Russell Westbrook was just like, start the film.
Yeah. No, that's real.
And that's his partner.
Hey, listen, let me tell you something. In every business, and even in our business, they're your friends. It's almost like when you're dating somebody. Oh, we good to date, but we don't need to be married. They're your friends, but we don't need to work together.
No, and it's interesting because the friends that you make at work.
Yeah.
Y'all get that. You know, like the friends that you meet at work while working, the relationship develops completely differently. Like my relationship with Dan formed like at the jobs that we were at, you know, like I was friends with Pablo before we started doing the show.
Gotcha.
It's a totally different dynamic.
Precisely.
When you bring the friendship in with you, right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily good or bad. It's just, there are things that don't matter as your friend that matter on this other stuff.
But you also learn stuff about them if you didn't work with them before in any capacity. Like Michael Holland and I have been friends for 20 years, but we never worked every day together.
Exactly.
And so you'd be like, okay.
Didn't know that. Gotcha.
This is why you like to do things. Okay, good to know. Yeah, it's different, man. If I'm James Harden, though, man, you know, one of my favorite movies is The Departed.
Yeah.
And there's a scene in The Departed when Martin Sheen asked Leo DiCaprio, he's like, do you want to be a cop or do you want to appear to be a cop? It's an honest question. Does James Harden want a championship or does he want to appear to want a championship? Because if he wanted a championship and he doesn't get it, it would haunt me looking back at how I screwed around and how unprofessional I was to the point where every superstar that this organization brought in to help me get to that championship, I drove them off.
Yep. And by the way, I think what has masked a lot of this with him is that the first problem was with Dwight Howard. Because everybody else is so Dwight, right?
Yes, easy.
But in terms of like showing up and doing, like Dwight Howard clearly works hard, right?
Yeah,
like I don't know if Dwight is late all the time, because he seemed like he might be the goofy guy to be late all the time. But he also seemed like the cat to somebody be like, hey man, get your goofy ass in here on time.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And then he'll wind up showing up, but it didn't work with Dwight.
Right.
And then everybody just blamed that on Dwight because Kobe had already soured us on Dwight before this happened, right? And the way he left Orlando. Then it was Chris Paul, and it's like, well, nobody likes working with Chris Paul, right? And then it's Russell Westbrook.
Lightning rod.
Right.
He's hard to play with anyway. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think the big thing about that story that Tim McMahon did to me, once he made the point that was basically, say what you want about Russ, but he show up on time. That kind of put Harden through a different lens. And after a certain place, it's like it can't all be somebody else's fault.
And then
Harden gets to be interesting because all these other dudes want to leave to get away from James. And now James want to get away from the team.
Yeah.
And they like, wait. Hold up, dog. Are you not paying attention to what is clearly going on here, right? Like, a part of the, you may not be the problem. I'm just telling you, they ain't a single one of them dudes who spent all that time, all their lives grinding that hard to watch you dribble, shoot, and then not show up on time to even practice dribble, shoot.
Yeah.
Not a single one of them got into the game to do that.
And it's like, it's also too, all right, man, like you the star, we get it. You're exceptional. You know, you make exceptions for exceptional people, got it. But it's like, yo, do you love this or not? You know, yeah. It's like, I mean, because the people that love it, and it's not an ask to get them to show up to get better or just to make us better. Get here on time to make us better. You know, don't just get here on time because maybe you don't need to work, but set that tone of professionalism and accountability that might make the difference in the playoffs. And I mean, we don't even need to go into the different playoff flameouts he's had. So that's yeah. For itself.
In large part because he's exhausted from trying to do
all that ripping and running
thing himself, all that ripping and running, and trying to do it all himself, right? Yeah. Like all that dribbling, all that shooting. Like I was talking to Vinny about this, and Vinny says when you start talking to guys around the league about Harden, and their thing is, I would be exhausted. Like as much as we talk about Harden and his physique at various mm-hmm. points, mm-hmm. no, he's actually has always had to be like incredibly conditioned yeah. in order to play the kind of basketball that he does.
He plays hurt, plays a lot of minutes, plays every game.
Yep.
I mean,
love shooting that much.
Yeah. Yeah. He loved the games, man. But I mean, it's bigger than that. He got to play that capital T, capital G game. So,
yeah. But he's also now 31, man.
Yeah.
You know, like the window and your time to get this figured out is kind of shrinking. I also want to make a point that I have not made anywhere else. Don't be surprised if he don't go nowhere.
I agree.
I mean, like ever. Now, granted, this story has a significant twist that differs so far from the James Harden story. But people who are not from Houston will not remember this part of the Akeem Olajuwon story. Mm-hmm. So in the 91-92 season, Olajuwon had a hamstring injury.
Mm-hmm.
The owner accused him of malingering, basically, mm-hmm. and said that he was faking the injury. And you could imagine an incredibly proud man like Akeem Olajuwon, who had absolutely been betrayed by his franchise for every year of the previous 6 years. Like, you go back and look at those rosters of who Olajuwon played with from 86 to 92. There's nobody there, man. Like, this was a man all by himself. Half the team got strung out, right? Ralph Sampson couldn't keep it together physically, so they had to trade him. And he was out there by himself. And then they came out here and accused Olajuwon of faking this injury. And Olajuwon had enough, right? Asked for a trade.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of the PR war, it didn't work for the Rockets like they thought it would. And the reason is, that is the city where J.R. Richard had a stroke after telling people that his arm hurt and nobody wanted to listen to him. And then he damn near died, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So Olajuwon coming out and being like, I said I was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't necessarily swing everybody, but that's a city that at that time would be more inclined to listen to what he was saying because they just saw maybe the greatest pitcher in the history of the franchise almost die because ain't nobody believe it when he was saying that he had a problem, right? Mm-hmm. So it got bad. It got tense. Olajuwon either wanted a trade or wanted them to make the team better. He wanted one of the two. They did neither. They just said, nope. You'll be coming back to play. They had a lottery pick that year. Everybody in Houston wanted in the draft Harold Miner. Remember Harold Miner?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Baby Jordan.
The Rockets had a chance to draft Harold Miner, and they did not, and they took Robert Horry. And I just remember the boos and my cousin calling me, who is Robert Horry? Like they just could not believe it, right? And so they had Robert Horry, but the Rockets didn't do anything to make the team better other than hire Rudy Tomjanovich.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Go 7 games in the second round of the playoffs in 93, 94, 95, win the championship. Now, in 95, they got Clyde Drexler, so I can make an argument that they made the team better. But it wasn't just that he didn't go nowhere. They didn't even do a damn thing.
Yeah.
They were just like, nah, man, it's the team we got, bro. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you. They're like, yo, Olajuwon's like, yo, I think you guys are being cheap. I can see why you might say that. Right?
Yeah.
And then it got back together.
Yeah.
It is not impossible that this can be worked out, right? Especially yeah. all that time he has on his contract. maybe he gets along with Steven Silas. You know, like maybe that winds up working in a way that's better than he thought.
I'm interested in this team this year. I mean, listen, it's preseason, I know. I mean, John Wall looks ready to ball. You know, I mean, maybe DeMarcus Cousins is healthy. They might have got the Steeler free agency with Christian Wood. So I'm interested to see how they play together this year. But no, I feel you, man. This might turn out to be like a blip in the, you know, blip on the radar or a bump in the road or what have you. I mean, hell, Kobe once upon a time asked for a trade. They could say, nah. you ain't going nowhere. Yep. I mean,
and by the way, it got good right after he did that.
Yeah. I mean, but also who, bro, I like Drew Holiday a lot. Bro, Drew Holiday just went for 3 picks and 2 swaps. And players.
Right.
No way Brooklyn gonna trade Kyrie or KD. Who else they got that Houston would want? If Philly's serious about, you know, keeping Simmons with Embiid, they got nothing. The contenders that he wants to go to either have already used their assets to get good or don't have anything that they're willing to give up, which is why they're contenders in the first place.
Right.
So, I mean, how's this? I'm with you. I think he's stuck like Chuck for a minute.
Yeah, well, let me tell you the other thing I think that is tied to this is that story coming out about everything being built around him and all of that. Even if that story had not come out, he is squandering the leverage that he had in the building, right? And so this whole thing was built around James Harden. Oh, you don't want to be here anymore. How about this? We'll offer you a 2-year extension for $105 million. Oh, you still don't want to be here, huh? I damn you.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's the response. But James Harden is famously passive aggressive. Like that was part of why it didn't work with Dwight is because they was both passive aggressive.
Yeah.
And part of why Harden and Westbrook got out is both of them are aggressive aggressive. They was just like, yeah, nah, we ain't doing that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So Harden been doing all this different passive aggressive stuff with all these dudes who had to take it because it's James Harden's team. Well, James Harden say, he doesn't even want to play with us anymore. Those cats don't have to put up with this now. Nobody has to run behind James because this ain't James' team anymore. So when James show up to that film session 15 minutes late or say something under his breath to PJ or something like that, PJ might come put your ass up on the wall. Why? Because PJ don't have to bow down to you no more because this ain't even really your team because you don't want it to be your team. If you say the I want to trade thing, okay, and you get stuck here, and these cats really don't care if you come or go, PJ don't care if he come or go. PJ wants his extension, right? PJ don't care what happened to James Harden. Give me my extension. Most of them cats out there are not in a position to be worried about winning championships. They out here trying to stay in the league and trying to get some money, all right? And this dude gonna come in here and start acting up about it?
Yeah.
Nobody has to put up. Steven Silas, he don't have to put up with it.
Leverage and credibility in the organization, no question.
Yep. And they go. And so now James going to have to come out here and figure this out, you know? I think it's probably going to ultimately result in him playing for the Houston Rockets. You know, maybe they find a way at the end of the year to parlay something and get some players, right, to strengthen what it is they have. Or it's entirely possible, like with Olajuwon in 93, like with Kobe in 08, they actually turn out to be better than anybody expected. And that whole thing turns around. But like when people talk about this player empowerment era, I want to be traded. I can be traded. Dog, it ain't gone that far. It's got to the point where I have 1 year left on my contract and I'm not going to come back. Trade me or lose me for nothing. Right. To me, that's not even power.
That's in the organization's best interest too. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm just letting y'all know y'all can do this now or we can do this later. And even with Kawhi was like, I want to go to California at the end of that. Cool. How'd you like to go to Toronto? We're not even asking.
Yeah, exactly.
You're on the way up there. Like, it worked out.
Yeah.
But he didn't get what he wanted.
Right.
In the course it is. And James Harden ain't about to get what he wants. Because if I'm the Rockets, I ain't giving you what you want. I don't want to play here, no.
So we've already given you everything you want. And look where it got us. Yeah, it got us to the playoffs. But we've given you everything you want. And now you want up out of here. This is literally his team.
No, James Harden is now working with something that all of us work with at our jobs. Which is when we go in and ask for something. And they hit us with, we're working on it.
No, we're efforting that.
We're working on it. Look, I remember when I was doing Around the Horn from North Carolina. I was working out of a...
So it's the early days.
Yeah, it's like 2010, 2011. I was working out of an independent studio. And they wanted... I don't remember who wanted this, whether it was on the producer's end, whether it was on the studio end, whatever it was. They wanted to get me a new chair. I don't know why they were so caught up in getting me this new chair, but they wanted the chair. I think the thing was the chair I had wheels and like turned. And so no matter who you are, if you in a chair that turns, like you look at me right now in the chair.
You're going to turn.
Right. Yeah. You turn. It's just what you do. And that's not great TV. And so they wanted to send a chair.
I thought it might have been a height thing.
No, no. I swear for God, for 2.5 years, that chair was going to be there next week. I don't think the chair ever got there. I don't remember now, but I don't think the chair ever got there in my time of sitting in the chair. But they swore up and down somebody was working on sending me this chair.
Yeah.
Right. And that was just a chair. James Harden, like, yo, man, just wanted to holler back at y'all about that trade. Man, calls, man. It's been busy over here, man. You know, the season just started, you know.
Holidays, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but don't worry. I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Like, next time we hear something, that's where James Harden is.
Mm-hmm. Keep you in the loop. Keep you in the loop.
Yeah.
No, don't worry. We're on it.
Well, flip this up one more time for the people, because I saw you talk about something today. It warmed my heart.
I knew it would.
It legitimately warmed my heart. So I am 40 years old. I believe you are 41.
Yes, sir.
I contend, pound for pound, greatest video game of all time has to be Tecmo Bowl. Pound for pound. Just in terms of enjoyment that you had playing the game.
Yes.
Pound for pound.
Yes.
Tecmo Bowl. Until Madden, this is what people don't get. Until Madden, there was no game that came even close to feeling like it was an actual football game.
Yeah.
Like Tecmo Bowl.
Yeah.
And before Madden, wasn't no game that had everybody's names on it.
Right.
Right? They had the contract with the Players Association. Now, granted, it was the limitations of the day. So the first Tecmo Bowl, instead of having 11 guys on the side, you had 9 guys on the side.
And they all was like, you know.
Yes. They did. They had kind of herky-jerky movements.
Yeah.
But it had like little subtleties in it. Like the crossing route was a timing route.
Yeah.
And so if you were getting blitzed, you throw it to the crossing route and you could hit the dude. Where like it had all these little amazing things about it. It was the best. And when I hear that song start, yes, it is.
You know how much of a genius you gotta be to stay a step ahead when you ain't got but 4 plays?
Yes.
You be over here with the control, you keep it all close to your chest. So you try to like use your fingers a different way so they didn't know whether you pick it up in B or down in A. It's like, wait, let me make sure you don't know what I'm picking over here. Because if they get your play, that's a wrap. It's blowing up. Except if you had Bo Jackson, you could pick his play and he could still score.
Didn't matter. On a running play.
Mm-hmm.
On a running play. Like some other cats, they might find a hole and like breakthrough. Like if you had Walter Payton on that play to the right.
Yeah.
You can if you made the right cut, you could go get it. But like this game came out in like 1988, 1989, somewhere in there. Yeah. It is everything, right? And I don't blame you youngsters. You would not understand for watching this game. But Michael Smith, I saw you say that you actually kept your own stats.
I did.
In the Tecmo Bowl.
I don't know if that was just like, look, I could romanticize it and be like, yeah, that's when I knew I was going to be a sports writer. When I was basically covering the games and writing down each play as it happened and counting my own stats. That was me practicing. But when I was on cover high school sports years later, nah, man, I just was that obsessed with it. And not only am I just pleased that other people, I find that there are others like me in this world, I feel seen right now, but it allows me to hold on to the belief, Bomani, that had I not been so committed to Tecmo Bowl, it took my ass across the street to Melanie Playground and play Little League, then maybe I could have played college ball. I don't know. You know, I feel like, you know, I was a late bloomer. Maybe I could have played college ball if I wasn't so focused on Tecmo Bowl. Bro, I'm telling you, I would write down every play, count the stats, keep the season stats. And all it did, you want to talk about once Madden franchise mode came around and they did it for me, it was a dream come true to be able to actually. Didn't we talk about this on High Noon? When you had me on High Noon once, we were talking about the dynasty mode in NCAA and uploading the roster.
Yes.
And didn't you tell me you had a team with like Michael Vick and like Mike Williams, like USC Mike Williams?
Yes, yes, yes. What I did was this. This is where it just got to be. Because what it happened was on the NCAA, Maurice Claret was a 99 going into his sophomore year.
Yeah.
All right. And then Mike Williams was a 99. It was sophomore Mike Williams. Sophomore Mike Williams. So these guys are that age. And then I let them get to the age on the NCAA to then declare for the draft. And see, I knew it was Mike Williams. I knew it was Maurice Claret. them other scouts, that computer scout, they didn't have time. And so I made all the moves. And so I got 25-year-old Michael Vick.
Yeah.
I got 21-year-old Maurice Claret coming off being a two-time 99 in college, and 6'5", 230-pound Mike Williams coming off, because I knew it was worth the draft capital.
Yes.
To move up.
Yes.
And get these dudes.
Bro, listen, I may or may not remember certain picks that I made in franchise mode to this day that I hold near and dear to my heart. Bro, one time I had the Bucks franchise, and I drafted this defensive end named Julius Rucker. Still remember this dude. I don't remember real players. Julius Rucker played about 20 years, broke the all-time sack record. And remember, after every season, he'd be like, yo, is he going to come back or is he going to retire? He would come back year after year and still get double-digit sacks. That's when I knew that I could be a GM. You can't tell me. Next time you talk to Lewis Riddick, tell Lewis Riddick to hit me up, okay? I got an eye for this, dog. I got
That's
an eye for this.
That's how thing. I knew that I could be a GM.
I'm telling you, man. Now listen, bro, I mean, you know, if we confess it, listen, I'm feeling vulnerable right now. Are we confessing? There may or may not have been a time in the not too distant past, you know, even pre-pandemic, where I might have waited until the NFL season concluded, forced every result as it actually happened, so that the draft order was as it should be, then proceeded to sign every player to every team that they actually signed within free agency. They got people out here doing God's work for money. You know, they got people out here that's creating the draft classes and putting them on the internet right now. Probably found the most realistic draft class, uploaded that draft class, and then basically had the next year's Madden that I made on my own. So when I tell you that there is not a single rookie or second year player in the NFL that I didn't already know was going to be good, it's like I already knew. I could tell you about all these people from what they did in franchise mode. It's a sickness, but Monty, as you and Ike Turner would say, only thing that's got me off that narcotic is that I got a new job now. I got a company and I got a job. So I ain't really got time to do it. But if I had time, I would have probably turned the Jets around by now. I'd have probably already drafted Trevor Lawrence and won a Super Bowl by now. That's just where I'm at 41 years old, bro. Help me. Let me
tell you maybe my favorite Madden franchise thing to happen, right?
Who was your team that you like to turn around? Were you the type – Did you turn around your favorite team or the worst team?
Well,
I always
try
to do the worst teams.
So here's the thing, man. I stopped playing Madden like 04, like 05. Whenever the passing cone came around, that was just more than I was willing to put in, right? Mm-hmm. But I was going with favorite team, which was the Falcons. And why would I go with anybody other than 23-year-old Michael Vick at a 95, right? Yeah. Like, the one thing already set. But my homeboy, George, he got this story. There was this guy in his league, and I know he's listening. I don't even know if he remembers this. But there was this quarterback that was in his fantasy league. Because in 03, I moved to Durham for graduate school, which is a very lonely, solitary situation. And my man moved to Louisville and become a school teacher, had a very lonely, solitary situation. And we would really be like on the phone with each other, like hours, playing our own Maddens. And like we.
Because
like,
this wasn't online back then.
No, this wasn't
so
online.
The two of y'all, yeah.
He got his league.
Yeah.
I got my league, and we're just keeping each other up to date on each other's leagues.
Yeah.
And his league had this guy named Rob Cobb. And Rob Cobb was basically like a Michael Vick clone, it looked like, on the stats. He had all the speed or whatever. And the whole time, George would be looking at him and be like, I can't understand why the teams that have him don't use him right, because he ain't got no running yards. Like, he just couldn't figure out what the problem was. And then he finally made the decision to pull the trigger and get Rob Cobb.
You traded for him?
Yeah, I either traded a free agent, like somehow he acquired Rob Cobb.
Yeah.
Rob Cobb, he put him on the team. Rob Cobb's acceleration was 35. He sorted acceleration for the whole team, and Rob Cobb had a lower acceleration than the lineman.
So he was fast, but acceleration?
But he couldn't get fast.
He had no gear. Oh, wow.
He didn't have that first step.
Oh, wow.
He got a limit. Like we had idealized Rob Cobb in our head. I ain't even done it, and I wasn't even part of the league.
But Bomani,
Rob Cobb couldn't dial it up.
People have to understand the satisfaction. Very few things are as satisfying as scouting a player, even the computer-generated draft classes. Scouting a dude, because the scouting system has gotten much less sophisticated. Now it's just like strong arm, accurate, whatever. There was a time, like 03, 04, where they would literally have like notes.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, you know, he's a tough player, you know, who plays hurt. bruh, you get a dude in the middle of late rounds, because Jimmy Johnson once told me that's what championship teams are built for, money. Okay? Championship teams are built in the middle of late rounds. Like, I can speak on experience from this. And you're not going to tell me that developing a dude and watching him grow in your system into a superstar is not one of the most satisfying feelings in the world. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. Dude, I'd do it on NCAA, recruiting them, redshirting them.
Who'd you did Texas?
Oh, yeah, I did Texas. And honestly,
but that's cheating, though. You can't do Texas. It's easy to recruit at Texas.
I understand why you say that. And by the way, I didn't really understand how easy it was to recruit at Texas until you get like a few years down the line in your dynasty. Yeah. And you look up and like Rice and TCU are in the top five because they're recruiting in Texas.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But look, it would be different if it wasn't my squad. And like when I was really into NCAA, they had Vince. Like, you're going to try to tell me? Because you got to remember, when Chris Sims was a senior, Vince Young was a true freshman. He was redshirting that year in real life.
Yeah.
In Bomani life, Chris Sims was out of there, and we started running that option.
Yeah, man. I had Central Florida. I was trying to go. I was trying to take down.
Oh, okay. I was cheating using Texas, but you go get Central Florida.
But I had to recruit against Florida State, Miami, and the Gators.
And how many years did it take before that wasn't an issue?
About 3 years before I was a national champion.
That's all I'm saying.
But it felt good.
Yeah, you Urban Meyer over there. You turn anybody around. I got you. You go undefeated at Utah. I feel you.
Exactly.
I got you. But I started with Tecmo. Like, I realized after a certain point, like, the basis of my relationship with my brother is Tecmo Bowl.
That's real.
Because my brother's 13 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I put him on the Tecmo Bowl because the homie Greg Fagel in like fourth or fifth grade let me borrow his Tecmo Bowl cartridge because I had a Nintendo, but
hey,
no
Bo,
game.
Hey, Bo.
Yes. Blowing that thing.
And put it halfway in and
that's
slam
right.
it. You know?
That's right. And the next level trick was a little bit of alcohol on a Q-tip.
I didn't do that once
to fully resuscitate a copy of Battletoads. So my brother would come home for Christmas. And honestly, for basically every year from 1990 until, I want to say 1996.
Yeah.
We spent basically all of Christmas break playing whatever was the most current iteration of Tecmo Bowl at that time. Because what was he going to talk about? Like he brought the Tecmo to his homies in college, right? Yeah. And then it turned into a thing. And we would just have battles, man.
Bro, I used to play with my dad. That's you talking about brother. Yeah, it was me and my brother. But me and my brother much closer. Like, he's like less than 2 years younger than me. But same with my dad. We would play Tecmo Bowl. And the other thing with me and my brother, what you know about Contra?
Up, up, down, down. Yeah, see, I ain't had nobody in the house with me, so I couldn't.
Me and my brother playing Contra was our bonding experience. You ain't lying.
Yeah.
The other game we didn't mention, 2005 MVP baseball with Manny Ramirez on the front.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say my wife was very close to giving birth, like days away.
Oh, no.
And, I never forget, and she don't let me forget it. She was like, Michael, come rub my back, you know. And I'm like, I'll be right there. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm trying to get the Devil Rays to the World Series.
How'd that go over?
We were already married, you know, so say I survived it only because we were already married.
Yeah, yeah. I was about to say, wow.
I'm in the AL East. I'm going up against the big damn Red Sox and the Yankees with this little bitty payroll. You know, I want a challenge. When I used to do Madden, I used to pick the Cardinals because you have to liquidate the roster. You have to liquidate the Arizona Cardinals roster, get rid of Adrian Wilson. This was young Larry Fitzgerald. You know, yeah, Marcel Shipp at running back. They had so much work need to be done. It was a commitment.
Here's my question. While you were overhauling the roster, did you play with the team or did you simulate the season?
That is a great question. That is the question. And the answer is I played the critical games. I simulated it for the most part. But if it was like for the division, playoff games, you got to play playoff games. But regular season games, I'm simulating. That is a great question.
Yeah, no, because like for me, after a point on like a franchise on Madden, I would basically leave the sideline. I was no longer the coach. I basically moved to the executive box and become more or less the president of football operations and then just simulate it out. It's one thing for me to be like, because I play so much, am able to win with this team.
Mm-hmm.
Nah. I want to demonstrate to the league just what I have built. You know, that anybody could use this team and they could win and go 14-2. Anybody can do that.
You want to hire the coaches?
Yeah, I do all that. But more or less, I would be me, but I just wouldn't play the games. I would just simulate it out. I had enough faith in the foundation that I had built that I didn't need to be such a control freak.
You had a culture in place. People showed up on time to film
that
sessions.
That is right.
This is such a connection that we share. And okay, I'm going to tell you the most recent like Hall of Fame player I had. All right. Well, that because it's somebody you know. I told you, you know, it wasn't too long ago. I'm only like a few months sober at this point. I had the Cardinals. This before they had Kyler Murray, Josh Rosen, and I created Cliff Kingsbury as the coach. No, Kingsbury wasn't there. It was the other coach before him. So it's Josh Rosen, and Josh Rosen gets hurt at halftime of the opener against the Rams, and I'm down like 21. In comes an undrafted quarterback that I signed in the preseason. And this opener, I decided to play. We come back to beat the Rams. I put him back on the bench the next week because I'm like, nah, you know, Josh Rosen's still my starter. Josh Rosen stinks it up. In comes the backup again, leads us to victory. I give him the job. He goes on to have a good rookie season. He goes on to win 10 Super Bowls, win 6 MVPs, and set all kinds of records. That quarterback's name was Gardner Minshew II. I do not. Before Gardner Minshew ever took the field for Jacksonville, you couldn't tell me Gardner Minshew. I was like, watch Gardner Minshew ball out.
How are you still this person? How are you still like this?
I don't know, man. I was going through it, bro. The last few years have been tough on you, boy.
I guess with all due respect, you did have time.
I did have time.
I had not thought about it.
I did have time.
With all due respect, you did have time.
Bro, your boy had time, and I was not trying to watch no real sports. I'm like, I need to escape. So I escaped something serious. Trust me, bro. And honestly, my relationship with Madden comes and goes because I stopped once I had children, real talk. Once I had children, I stopped. So that would have been 2006. And I stopped for the longest time until my son got old enough to play. I passed this demon on to him, this generational curse on to him. And so that was only a couple of years ago. And then like last year, I really, really got into it again. But now I don't do it anymore. I haven't touched it. And my son will say, Dad, come play. I'm like, son, I can't. And the reason I can't is because I know once I start, I'll be down in the basement. So
I couldn't play Madden with my kids.
Because you take no mercy?
I hate losing too much.
But my son likes franchising.
Yeah. Okay, well, that part's cool, right? Yeah. But, like, I wouldn't be mad losing to them once or twice or whatever. But, hey, man, they better at these games than we are, right? Like, they thumb shorter. It's a little easier for them to make the moves.
They're more quick twitch than we are. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Nah, man, I can't have that. I'd be so heated. Like, me and my brother, man, we just have – just like it would be like, yo, we just gotta take a couple hours, man.
Yeah.
You go over there, I'm going to go over here. Because when you play somebody over and over again on Tecmo Bowl, what happens is y'all basically get to the same level of play. And there's some small thing that turns everything.
Yeah.
And it requires some tiny little adjustment. And the other person doesn't even know they've made the adjustment, but the adjustment has happened. So now you got to figure out how to make that tiny little adjustment. And then you have 3 days in a row. You play 10 games a day, 3 days in a row. You don't win. That hurts.
You were a Super Bowl guy too, though, right?
Because
that's when didn't the Oilers come in Tecmo Super Bowl?
Yeah, everybody came in Tecmo Super Bowl.
And that was your squad. You got Warren Moon.
No, man. I remember I brought my teams with me from Atlanta.
Okay.
So I didn't have like that real. And the Oilers was out there running that 4 wide receiver.
Yeah.
And that was just not a good schematic to try to like really get it done in Tecmo Bowl. I like to run the ball. Like, you could really make it happen. So the first Tecmo Bowl, you had your two off-limits teams, right? Like Chicago and San Francisco. You could only use Chicago and San Francisco if the other person was using the other.
You don't put the Raiders in that?
No, because the Raiders defense wasn't good.
Yeah, you're right. Up there, Howie Long. Yeah, I don't remember anybody else that was working.
Yeah, I didn't put the Raiders off in that one. It was Chicago and it was San Francisco. Like those were your two teams
that
you could just have epic battles with the two of them going at it. And then the no-brainer greatest Tecmo Bowl player on the first Tecmo game. I feel like there's only one vote for the greatest, and it's actually not Bo Jackson.
Oh, wait, hold on. Let me second guess this. Hold on. If it's not Bo Jackson.
I think both sides of the ball.
Oh, Lawrence Taylor.
Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the key is with Lawrence Taylor was a special teams demon because Lawrence Taylor made it impossible to kick an extra point.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Feel, like an extra point, you might be able to get it off.
But there wasn't a roughing the kicker because remember you used to tackle a Tecmo ball, they used to both go flat. Like you just hit them.
Yes. So, yes. But like any kid that wants to be like, I don't understand what y'all old heads be talking about with Lawrence Taylor. I feel like even with the primitivity, if that's a word, of that era of Tecmo ball, if you put a controller in somebody's head and tell them to control Lawrence Taylor, suddenly it will all make sense.
Absolutely. Nobody better, man.
I don't know what it says about me that I can just talk about Tecmo ball over and over and over and over.
This is the best conversation I've had in a long time. We should have been vibing on this a long time ago.
Yeah, like we could have been here all day long, man. I remember when I first got a radio show, when there would be something with football highlights, I went online and I took a clip of the Tecmo Bowl theme song, like the music.
Yeah.
Because if you put football highlights under the Tecmo Bowl joint, you'd be, it's like playing I Am a Real American. If you are of that age, it gets in your blood. Like, do 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 do. Doop 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 doop. Like your head nod, like you just, it make you happy.
Bruh, I still remember, you remember your all-time high? What's the most points you ever scored, Tecmo Bowl? I remember mine.
It was either 77 or 84.
Bro, I put up 91 with the Browns. Put up 91 with Bernie Kosar and Kevin Mack and Ernest Biner. Hell yeah. Put up 91, dog.
Is this on Tecmo or on Super?
This was Tecmo. Somebody tweeted me today. It was great, man. We had a moment on Twitter. I ain't had one of those in a while. Somebody was like, you know, Tecmo Bowl taught a whole generation of people how to multiply by 7. I'm like, you ain't never lied.
Yes. This is the other subtlety about Tecmo Bowl. And after a while, you got back, you know, you were able to go understand, which is we all knew like who the good players were that had the ball. But they had programmed in very well who was and was not a good offensive line or a good offensive lineman. And you would look up sometimes, like the dudes that were offensive line beasts would be out there just flattening people. They were also very honest about quarterbacks, like Phil Simms. I don't give a damn if he won a Super Bowl MVP or not. They had that dude out there throwing lollipops. And the most Tecmo Bowl thing ever, the Washington Blackskins.
That wasn't their name, huh?
No, because on Tecmo Bowl, no team had a name because they had the contract with the NFLPA.
Oh, right.
The black dudes on Washington.
They were darker? Now that you mention it.
They were as black as that hoodie that you have on.
Because Doug Williams was a quarterback.
So they would just pick one black dude to have the skin tone for all the black dudes, and they looked like they were wearing black sleeves. Like, they looked like they was going to take off their jerseys and go rob people.
Yeah.
That's how black, like, it looked like they were just dressed in all black. And I'm like, and I guess this is a Japanese company, so they good to make mistakes like this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that was the thing about watching. Everybody's like, dog, why are they so black?
You know who was and it used to bother me because he was my favorite quarterback growing up was Miami because I used to love Dan Marino. So I get Miami, but their defense was so sorry.
All they were was Dan Marino and Mark Duper and Mark Clayton. Yeah. That was it. But his passes never went off the screen. His passes were
straight darts every single time.
Straight darts.
Absolutely. Man.
Straight darts. Man.
Bro, we got to find a Tecmo Bowl system, and we get back to real life. We got to just have a Tecmo Bowl festival, dog.
I'm down. We should find some way to have a tournament. It'd be a bunch of old-ass is out here playing Tecmo Bowl. Right? It's going to be so much gray hair out here playing Tecmo Bowl. So much gray hair. So many fraying hairlines having the time of our lives.
Fire up franchise mode.
There we go, man. Michael Smith, check him out on Peacock. Brother from another. They rolling. Strong show. You need to peep that. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Thank you to everybody. This year for us has been our most successful year on this podcast in terms of listenership by just about every metric. When the sports world stopped, our numbers and the people who are listening to us actually went up in that time. It has been fantastic. And the biggest reason that this has happened is Gabe Bassain, who, I mean, I say after every show, he handles everything behind the scenes, but like in a very sincere and important way that I don't think you can quite understand if you don't like work in this business. This dude makes this thing move in so many different ways and goes above and beyond in so many ways, whether it's coming up with ideas for segments, working on research and things like that so we can get a handle on what's going on with the audience. Not every podcast producer is getting on Twitter and setting up polls to ask you guys what it is that you like about the show, coming up with book club and all these sorts of things. Like, that's him. I'm the person whose name is on the marquee of this. So there's always a measure of credit that I am going to get for what happens with it. But this thing is not half as good as it is without Gabe. It's that important. And so I say to him, thank you, sir, because 2020 has been a monster for everybody. But this podcast for me, and I feel confident saying for a lot of the people listening, has been one of the best things that we've had in this year. And so I thank you all so much for listening to us in this time. I thank Gabe for everything that he's done. I thank our regular guests. And a big part of why our regular guests are our regular guests in the way we've done it is that over the years, we've had a lot of celebrities and people that I just personally found interesting to do these podcasts. But it's become clear that you guys, the listeners, find it most interesting to listen to me talk to these people. So Joel Anderson, Vinny Goodwill, Nick Wright, Michael Smith, Taylor Rooks, Spencer Hall, Dominique Foxworth, Howard Bryant. I'm sure I'm missing a couple of other people, but like those folks that we just kind of go back to and just hang out with and talk while we're here. That is what you guys have enjoyed. I hope that we have been able to give you more of what you enjoy. And I hope that in 2021, we will continue to give you more of what you guys enjoy. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of weeks. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.